After 4 days of hunting, they still hadn't found any 2C's calves, except a few following 2C's mothers. These had simply strayed onto Jessup's land after branding. Even a cow ought to have more judgment, Huey thought. The grass was better on the Tarpley Range. Riding away from the last bunch they had inspected, Grady shook his head.
I told CC this was a wild goose chase. If Jessup was gonna steal, he's too big a man to mess around with Penny Annie's stuff like this. He'd do it in a big way. I've got a good mind to give up this foolishness and go home. If CC doesn't like it, he can fire me. There's always other jobs.
That might be so for a top hand of Grady's caliber, Huey thought, but he and Walter did not yet qualify. Huey had enjoyed this little adventure for its own sake, whether anything came of it or not.
We've still got grub. If nothing else, we could go over to the river and fish for a few days. CC doesn't expect us back so soon.
Walter hadn't talked much during the trip, especially to Huey. He rode most of the time in brooding silence. Now he protested.
That wouldn't be playing the game square with CC.
The game we're playing ain't exactly square either. Trespassing on another man's land, stirring up his stock.
I was just letting off a little steam. Oh, I wouldn't shortchange CC. We'll keep looking.
The next day they found about 20 cattle shaded up in a mesquite thicket where a shallow depression held water after a rain. They started pushing them out into the open for yet another perfunctory look at brands. The cattle balked at first, reluctant to give up the shade. Grady made a pass around the bunched cows and calves, giving the brands little more than a glance. Then he pulled up short and took a second look at a heifer calf. He turned back to examine more closely another calf that had recently been rendered a steer. The remnant of dried blood still clung to its hind legs. He dropped a small loop over the calf's neck to hold it.
Huey! Walter, come look at this!
Huey and Walter drew in closer. Huey saw nothing remarkable.
It's a J-bar and the cow's a J-bar, just like all the others we've seen.
Look again. That brand don't go all the way to the hide. It's just a hair brand.
Huey did not grasp the significance.
Somebody didn't take the time to do a good job.
Somebody knew damn well what he was doing. The hair will grow out after a while, and then there won't be any brand. Soon as its mammy's milk dries up and this calf weans off, it'll be a maverick. Anybody can burn his own brand on it. Chances are Eli would never know.
How'd they manage to do this under Jessup's nose?
Whoever done it worked out ahead of Eli's branding crew. He was smart enough not to get greedy about it. Just sleepered a few here, there, and yonder. Eli's boys would be too busy for a close look. They'd see the fresh brands and figure these calves just drifted over from an earlier gather.
Next fall or winter, somebody'll gather up the mavericks and brand them for their own.
He put Eli's earmarks on them. Sharp knife can alter those.
Who would think of such a thing?
It's an old trick. Probably started with the vaqueros in Mexico, like most everything else we do.
Kinda odd. We came over here trying to prove that Eli is a thief, and instead we find out he's the victim.
Maybe not the only one. Our branding count came up short. I'll bet somebody's been doing the same thing to us.
We better go by town and tell the sheriff.
Huey suspected Walter had another motive for a trip to Upton City.
No. The sheriff would ask why we were on Jessup's land in the first place. He might even figure it was us that did the hair brands. And if he didn't, Jessup would.
We best not say anything to the sheriff, and we sure don't want to tell Eli. But if I get the chance, I'll whisper in Mitch's ear, or Snort's.
They hadn't ridden more than a mile when Huey saw the chance coming. He looked back and saw two riders.
Somebody's catching up to us from behind.
Hell, we better think of something quick.
As the horseman neared, Huey recognized Snort Yarnell and the foreman, Mitch.
Hello there, boys!
Mitch seemed to suppress a grin as he reined up.
Howdy, Grady. Aren't you a long ways from where you belong? I thought Eli fired you off this place 3 or 4 years ago.
Eli never got the chance to fire me. I quit.
He'll want to know what y'all are up to, sashaying around over his country.
Grady struggled for a reply. Huey spoke up, saying the first thing that popped into his head.
We're trailing after some horses that strayed or got stolen.
Mitch shifted his attention to Huey.
Name's Calloway, ain't it? Seems like me and you had a slight disagreement in town.
Well, that didn't amount to much. We had a drink together afterwards. Several of them, best I can recall.
What kind of horses was they?
Horses?
The ones you're trailing.
Oh, them. One was a roan, kind of between a gray and a blue. 13 hands high, stocking on his right forefoot. And there was a black with a blaze face. Carries some kind of a Mexican brand on the left hip. Walks a little paddle-footed.
He amazed himself at the ease with which he picked the descriptions out of thin air. He could only hope that Mitch didn't ask him to repeat them.
You say you've been trailing him. I don't see no tracks here.
We lost the trail back yonder ways. We're trying to pick it up again.
Except maybe for Grady. I never saw a two-seas hand who could track a steer herd through a cornfield. You boys had better give it up and go back home before Eli puts the law on you for trespass.
What about those horses?
We'll scatter around. If we find them, we'll send them home. If we don't, CC can afford a little loss. He's got more cows than old Abraham.
He'll be awful disappointed.
Snort moved up beside Huey. He grinned, his gold tooth shining.
What color did you say them horses was, Huey?
Huey realized Snort hadn't believed a word of it.
Don't you remember?
I thought I wore the crown as the best liar in this part of the country. But after listening to you, I'm afraid that crown don't set easy on my head anymore.
Hell, Mitch, there ain't no horses. Huey just made that up.
I figured that.
CC sent us over here to hunt for two C's calves carrying the J-Bar brand. We didn't find any, but we found something else you ought to know about.
Grady described the hair-branded calves.
Don't let Eli know we told you. He'd lay it on to us.
He'd blame you anyway. He's got a suspicious mind when it comes to tarpaulin the two C's.
Mitch fell deep in thought while he rolled a cigarette, then offered the sack to the others.
Best thing to do is for us to hunt down those sleepered calves and brand them on the sly. The less Eli knows about it, the better.
Another thought came to him.
Whoever done this to us has probably done the same thing to the two C's.
If they have, CC would probably blame it on Eli. We'd best find them and brand them without making any noise about it.
I wish the two knotheads would get together. They could fix this problem. But they'd probably go at one another like two old bulls and get somebody hurt. Somebody like us.
Kind of makes me homesick for the Piney Woods. But we had a lot of knotheads there, too. The whole world's infested with them. Come on, we'll show you them calves we found.
The calves were with their mothers, back in the shade of a thicket. Mitch dropped a loop over the neck of one and dragged it out into the open.
Would y'all build a fire? I've got a cinch ring.
The two cows pawed dirt and threatened, while Mitch used the heated ring to burn a proper J-bar on their bawling calves' hides. As soon as their offspring were released, they led them back into the thicket in a long trot. Snort had been staring off into the distance as if he had little interest in the proceedings.
Eli would want us to escort you three off his property. Wouldn't be much out of the way for us to go by town.
It would be considerably out of the way.
Not me. Every time Eli fires you, he hires you back. With me, he might make it permanent.
Huey saw a hopeful gleam in Walter's eyes. He quickly headed it off.
Great idea, Snort, but we'd better get back to the two C's and start looking for hair-branded calves of our own.
Without thinking about it, Huey had adopted a typical cowboy's sense of commitment to the outfit for which he worked. So long as he drew its pay, it would be our ranch, our cattle.
You can do what you want to, Mitch. I'm going to town. If anybody asks about me, just tell him the last time you see me, I was headed straight up and angling a little to the west.
Watching Snort move away, Mitch shook his head.
There goes the best-natured old boy I ever knew. Only he hasn't got a lick of judgment.
I like a man who goes his own way, sunshine or rain. I wish I could be like that.
You're closer to it than you know.
They rode half a mile before Mitch reined to a stop, worry in his eyes.
You boys don't need me to guide you back to the two C's. I'd better trail after Snort and try to keep him out of trouble. If I can get him to the ranch before daylight, Eli won't ever have to know.
If you need any help with him, I'll go along.
Now, I can usually handle Snort, but thanks anyway.
Walter looked disappointed. Huey knew he was thinking about that girl in town.
You're a cowboy. You can't afford a woman anyway.
I may not always be a cowboy.
Huey was not prepared for that.
A man couldn't want a better life than what we've got right here.
Yes, he could.
No fence divided the two ranches. There was only a reluctant and unspoken understanding between Tarpley and Jessup regarding the boundary. In truth, neither actually owned all the land he claimed. Much still belonged to the state of Texas, but was too far from Austin for authorities to come and measure each man's use and collect for it. The two ranchers simply paid lease on enough acreage to make a show of legality. They didn't acknowledge that they had cattle on the rest. Anyone else would have had a legal right to turn cattle loose on the unleased land, but few dared. Tarpley and Jessup had reputations that intimidated all but the most determined. Both men had a nagging fear that some interloper would come along and buy the state land out from under them. For that reason, each had bought selected tracts that offered water. Neither was yet willing to make the investment that would give him full title to all the land his cattle grazed. After reaching the two seas, Huey, Walter, and Grady rode through several bunches of cattle, carefully looking over the calves. Huey saw the first of the hair brands, pointed.
There's one!
It was not obvious. He would easily have overlooked the fraud had he not specifically been looking for it. The ranch's branding crew had innocently passed over these calves because they appeared to have been branded already.
And here's another!
The rest of the calves bore normal brands.
Let's brand them here now!
They built a small fire and heated a cinch ring. Huey and Walter held the calves down while Grady laboriously burned the brands.
There's apt to be more.
CC ain't expecting us back yet. We've got enough grub to keep us for several more days. What say we three stay out and hunt for hair brands? CC don't need to know.
Whatever you say. I wonder who done this.
Some small owner trying to get bigger.
Huey tried to remember the small owners he had met.
What about that feller, Lauderman? Alvin Lauderman?
I don't want to believe it could have been Alvin. He seems like a good old boy. You never can be sure about people.
We ought to let the rest of the crew know what's happened so they can be on the lookout, too.
All except Fat Gervin. He'd run to CC like a schoolboy tattling to the teacher. And CC might go gunning for Eli. There's a good chance we'd have to bury two stubborn old men. Maybe some of ourselves.
The sheriff stood waiting with Tarpley when Huey rode up to the corrals on a young horse he was training.
Oh, hell. CC found out about those hair brands.
The 2C's crew had found and quietly rebranded more than 100 calves in the weeks since their discovery. Huey gripped the hackamore ring tightly and stepped down as far from the saddle as his legs would reach. The bronc had a worrisome habit of pawing at a dismounting rider. Trouble showed in Tarpley's face.
Sheriff's got something to talk to you about, Huey.
Huey felt an anxious moment, though he couldn't remember that he'd committed any serious breach of the peace. He'd not even been to town lately. He figured it was about the damned calves. They'd cause a war between CC and Eli Jessup yet, he thought. The sheriff's expression was as dark as Tarpley's.
Calloway, you remember the two fellers you testified against?
The subject was not what Huey expected.
Seems to me like I do.
Huey tried not to be infected by the older men's mood, but it made him feel cold.
You probably heard that Trumbull, you called him Smith, got away from Ranger Tanner some time back. He swore he would come back someday and get you.
Seems to me like I remember that, too.
Huey had thought about it every day.
There's a rumor that he's been seen. I don't know that I believe it. If I was him, I'd be in California by now, or maybe sailing to China. It don't make sense that he'd risk his neck just to get even with an ordinary cowpuncher like you. But criminals don't think like normal folks. Their brains are setting their heads sideways.
Walter had ridden up behind Huey. He'd heard most of it.
Maybe you'd better get away from here for a while.
Huey appreciated his concern, especially because Walter had not been talking to him much.
Where? I hate to just ride off and leave a good job. CC's been talking about giving us a raise.
I ain't said when that'll be.
How good a shot are you, Calloway?
Huey twisted the hackamore rein.
I couldn't hit a bull in the butt with a shotgun.
Too bad. You gotta figure that Trumbull is right smart with the firearm. That's one of the few things most criminals are good at.
If he was hell-bent on it, he could have found me easy before now.
It's probably a false rumor, but we better not forget that he cussed you every day he spent in my jail. He blamed you as much as he blamed Tanner, and you heard what he done to Tanner.
I testified because I was sore about him leaving me and Walter to take the punishment for him. Besides, Tanner told me it was my bounden duty.
It happens I got a job that'll take you away from here for a while, and you still draw your wages. By the time you get back, maybe Trumbull will be on cornbread and beans again. Or smelling flowers from the underside.
I'm listening with both ears.
I had figured on sending Grady, but you'll have to do. An old cowboy named Jerome Paget wrote that he's located a herd of cows for me. They're somewhere south of San Antonio. He wouldn't tell me just where. Guess he's afraid I'd go around and do him out of a commission.
Surely he wouldn't do that.
I thought about it, but I might need him again sometime. Anyway, I'm buying out the brand and 800 head to go with it. I'd like you to receive them for me, then help Jerome drive them out here.
Huey grinned at Walter. This was the kind of work he liked. Despite bad weather, indifferent food, and several wild and wet river crossings, he had enjoyed the trip he and Walter made up the trail to Kansas with a herd out of central Texas.
If I get started, I can travel a good ways before sundown.
Tomorrow morning will be soon enough. I doubt the Trumbull will get to you before dark.
I'm not afraid of Trumbull. Well, not a lot.
Come over to the house after supper. I'll give you directions and write a letter for you to carry.
Huey recognized that if he left here alone, Walter would be without his supervision and counsel. There was no telling what mess his brother might get himself into.
Can I take Walter with me? I may need his help.
But I got work to do.
I figured on Jerome Padgett hiring whatever extra men he thinks he'll need. Down there, they're mostly Mexicans, and they work cheap. But go ahead and take Walter if you want to. He's not costing me much more than a Mexican would.
Much obliged.
Walter wasn't, but he said nothing. His sour expression indicated that he would have much to say later. Tarpley appeared ready to turn away, then paused.
One more thing. I'd like you to take Fat Girvin with you.
Huey's jaw dropped. Fat would be about as much help as a broken leg.
Oh, what do we need with Fat?
I'd like to be shed of him for a while.
Well, why don't you just fire him?
Can't. For some reason, my wife and daughter have got attached to him. There's enough things bothering my life without two nagging women adding to the load.
The last thing Huey needed was Fat Girvin, like a 200-pound weight on his shoulders. But it was Tarpley's ranch and his call.
Well, whatever you say. I just wish you'd tell him that I'm the boss till Jerome Padgett takes over.
If he gives you any trouble, go off and leave him. You'll be doing me a favor, and the women folks will blame you instead of me.
Huey found little consolation in that.
Maybe Padgett will run him off and neither one of us will get blamed. What kind of feller is this Padgett?
He's had as many birthdays as I have. There ain't much cow country that he hasn't left tracks in. As a youngin', he drove herds all the way to New Orleans before the Yankee War. But don't worry about his age. He's forgotten more than you'll ever know about punching cattle.
Well, maybe me and Walter can learn some things from him.
Just watch and listen. Sober, he's a better hand than even Grady Welch. But he's got the same weakness as Snort Yarnell. Be up to you to keep him away from whiskey.
How can we tell him what to do if he's bossing the drive?
Figure it out as you go along. It's part of what I'm paying you for.
Tarpley and the sheriff retreated toward Tarpley's house. Walter turned to Huey.
You had no call to volunteer me. You're just trying to keep me away from me.
Last I saw, she was doing that for herself.
Only because you put me in a bad light with her. I've got a good notion to tell CC that I ain't going.
Bosses don't like being told what a man won't do. The trip will be good for you. I bet by the time we get back, you'll forget all about that farm girl.
I'll take you up on that bet. $20. No, better make it 10.
Fat Girvin was unsaddling his horse.
Are you fixing to tell Fat that he's going with us?
Oh, not me. He'll take orders better if they come from CC.
After putting away a healthy feed of red beans and Jessup beef, Huey turned to Walter.
Well, let's go over to the big house and get her instructions.
You go. You dragged me into this.
Pa would be disappointed if he could see the way you're acting. Or Ma wouldn't be proud either.
If Pa had had you for a brother, he never would have got to marry Ma in the first place. Then where would me and you be?
Fat Girvin sat on the edge of the narrow porch talking to CC's daughter.
It was touch and go with that Bronc, but I showed him who was boss.
She seemed to be hanging on every word. Poor girl, Huey thought. Even if she was as plain as a board fence, she could do better than Fat if she lived in a town where she had a chance to meet more young men. As it was, she seldom saw anyone other than the two C's cowboys. Even among those, he thought, any would be a better catch than Fat.
Evening, Doreen. Is your daddy in the house?
Door's open.
Huey hoped for Doreen's sake that Tarpley was keeping one eye on her and Fat, but the rancher was hunched over a battered roll-top desk. It appeared old and battered enough to have fallen out of an immigrant wagon on the Butterfield Trail. Tarpley looked up over a pair of black-rimmed reading glasses and nodded toward a rawhide-bottomed chair.
Sit yourself down. I'm finishing a letter for you to give the seller, along with a draft on a San Antonio bank. You'll have to write in the figure after you and Jerome have done counting the cattle. He could kind of herd a jackrabbits, but he don't read and write very good.
Tarpley's eyebrows raised.
You can read and write, can't you?
Sure. I went plumb through the fourth grade. Our pa was real particular about us getting an education.
Fourth grade is plenty for a cowboy. All he needs is to know more than the cows. Now, looky here.
CZ spread a map across the desk and traced with his forefinger.
Best thing is for you to go east and strike the head of the middle concho. Follow it to San Angelo. From there, an old military road will take you down through the hills to Fredericksburg and on to San Antone. And that's where you'll find Jerome Paget. He'll take you to where the cattle are at. I gather that there's a way south of San Antone.
How come he lives in San Antone, but the cattle are someplace else?
He doesn't live anywhere. Home is wherever he happens to drop his bedroll of an evening. When you get to San Antone, hunt up a fella named Patrick Appleby. Lives a couple blocks east of the Alamo. He can help you find Jerome.
Do we follow the same route coming back?
Well, that'll be up to Jerome. He knows how to travel through the settled country without a bunch of mad farmers getting the whole outfit thrown in jail. He'll likely go around the towns. He wouldn't want a bunch of town dogs stampeding the cattle through somebody's front parlor.
Tarpley told Huey he could draw on the San Antonio Bank for necessary supplies.
Go easy, though. I ain't fattening up a bunch of lean and hungry cowhands.
Mrs. Tarpley came out from the kitchen with a cup of coffee for Huey. She was a dainty little woman with a subdued voice she probably didn't get to use much when her husband was around.
He's just it.
She retreated back into the kitchen before Huey could accept the offer.
Too much coffee can addle the brain near as bad as whiskey.
Huey arose, and Tarpley held up a finger.
Now, listen good. I don't want everybody to know about this till we get the cattle home and situated. I got my eye on some land for sale on the other side of the river. If Eli gets wind of what I'm doing, that greedy old devil will bust a gut trying to buy it out from under me.
You won't find out from me and Walter.
If you run into any J-Bar hands and they ask, tell them you're going back east to visit your folks.
Ma died years ago. Pa just lasted a few years longer. Me and Walter ain't got any folks.
Well, then just lie to them. Those J-Bar hands will believe anything.
Have you told Fat that he's going with us?
Tarpley looked toward the front door. Fat still sat on the porch with his daughter.
Nope. As you leave, tell him to come in here. I'll spoil his evening for him.
Huey was pleased to comply. Huey and Walter saddled their horses soon after sunrise. Fat lingered at the breakfast table, throwing them late and getting started. He was puffed up like a toad when he finally appeared. He avoided speaking, but it was clear that he didn't relish the prospect of a long ride to South Texas and an even slower cattle drive back. He mumbled to himself as he dragged his rigging out of the saddle shed. Huey was not eager for his company. He and Walter didn't wait for Fat. They left ahead of him, leading a pack horse carrying enough supplies to last through the trip. Tarpley didn't trust merchants along the way because they tended to take advantage of travelers who had no other recourse. He owned a half interest in the Upton City Mercantile and got his goods at wholesale. Walter didn't speak half a dozen words the first couple of miles. Huey tried several times to get him to break the silence, but to no avail. Then Walter veered off to the west. Huey pointed eastward.
Hey, San Angelo's that away.
Upton City's this way. I ain't going any place till I get things straight with Eve. Go by yourself if you don't like it.
Huey didn't like it, but he saw that Walter was going to be stubborn. He never had been able to understand stubborn people.
You don't know if she'll even talk to you.
I'll do the talking if she won't.
CC will count the days we're gone.
I don't figure on marrying CC. But one of these days, I'm gonna marry Eve.
Walter's jaw was set like Ma's used to be when she made up her mind to something. Once she went that far, Huey had never seen her back off. He saw nothing more to be said or done for now. Maybe while they were gone, Eve would attach herself to some other poor cowpuncher or some Fort Worth drummer and let Walter go on being free like a man was supposed to be, the way Huey was. Fat had been trailing behind, his mood morose. He brightened as he realized they were headed for town. He caught up and stayed up. They reached the boarding house before midday. The noon dinner crowd had not begun to gather. Walter dismounted and boldly walked up the steps and onto the porch. He rapped his knuckles on the doorframe. Mrs. Pearson appeared, carrying a dish towel. She placed both hands on her broad hips.
Well?
I've come to see Eve.
We're busy fixing dinner. Anyway, she's already said about all there was to say to you.
Maybe so, but I've got something to say, even if she ain't.
Saints preserve us.
He pushed past a flustered Mrs. Pearson and entered the house. Huey had never seen Walter be so assertive. It seemed a pity to waste all that newfound boldness on some farm girl so thin she hardly threw a decent shadow. He tied the horses and followed. He hoped Eve would throw a pan of dishwater at Walter and prove that Huey'd been right all along. Such a show would be worth seeing. Eve was sliding a tray of biscuits into the oven.
Eve?
Startled, Eve burned her hand and lifted it to her lips.
I've got something to say to you.
She stared at him with wide eyes, the hand still against her mouth.
Eve, I tried to tell you before, but you wouldn't listen. I thought you wanted to dance with Fat Gervin. I'd have known it was all Huey's doing. I wouldn't hurt you for the world. I'm willing to hurt Huey, though, if it'll make you feel better. I'll beat him to a pulp.
Huey backed up a step. Eve shook off her surprise and offered Walter the slightest hint of a smile.
You'd whip your own brother? For me?
If you say so. He's not much of a fighter.
The look she gave Huey indicated that she was thinking about it. He backed up a little more.
Why? You don't know me, hardly.
But I'm going to know you a lot better. One of these days, I'm going to marry you.
Well, how do you know I'll marry you?
You will when you get to know me. And I'm going to see that you get to know me a lot better.
She seemed too stunned to reply.
Me and Huey are going off on a trip for C.C. Tarpley. When we get back, I'll come call.
I'm still provoked at you. I'm not promising you anything.
I wouldn't expect you to yet. I just wanted you to know I'm serious, and I've got honorable intentions.
She cast a disapproving glance at Huey.
What about him?
He don't count. It's just me and you.
Mrs. Pearson had been taken aback. Now she intervened.
If you men want dinner, you'll have to get out and let us finish cooking.
Yes, ma'am. We'll be on the porch.
Walter jerked his head at Huey.
Fat Gervin's outside. Would you feed him, too?
Mrs. Pearson looked at Eve, posing a silent question.
If he'll act the gentleman, I'll try to overlook his past behavior.
After dinner, Fat complained loudly about leaving town without a drink. Huey gave in. Walter hung back to talk to Eve some more. Huey entered the saloon with Fat. He saw a face he remembered from the night of the dance. Rancher Alvin Laudermilk leaned on the bar.
Howdy, cowboys. Y'all come over and have one with me.
It was evident that he'd already had one, perhaps three. Huey was hesitant, for he suspected Laudermilk might be the man hairbranding 2C's and J-Bar calves. But Laudermilk was insistent.
I don't get to come to town every day, but my mother-in-law has run us plumb out of flour and sugar and stuff. I have never seen a woman who eats so much. Keeps one man busy all day chopping enough firewood for the stove.
The bartender placed two glasses on the bar and Laudermilk filled them.
Belly up, cowboys. Ain't no use putting off till tomorrow what you can drink today.
How's your calf crop this year?
Best I ever saw. Even some of my bulls are having twins.
It occurred to Huey that it might not be as good as he expected, because they'd found most of those hair-branded calves. They rode at a leisurely pace that wouldn't tax the horses, though Fat griped as if it taxed him considerably. Towards sundown, Huey saw a windmill against the skyline, its cypress-veined fan turning lazily in a light breeze. Though not yet plentiful, mills like this were beginning to spread across dry West Texas to bring water from underground in places where nature had not placed it on the surface. They allowed livestock to graze, neglected areas formerly too far from water for animals to walk. They, along with barbed wire, were making it possible for settlement to survive in a desert-like environment.
That'll be a good place to make camp. The horses need water.
They had left Upton City miles behind, but Walter's mind was still there. Huey tried to pry some conversation out of him.
I'm not sure where the middle concho commences. If we follow this wagon trail east, we ought to find it in 50 or 60 miles. What do you think?
Fat had been trailing again, hunched in the saddle. Huey just ignored his frequent requests that they stop and rest. The windmill pumped water into a man-made shallow depression gouged into the ground. Elsewhere, it would be called a pond. Out here, it was called a tank. Though the facility was not yet old, small mesquites had already taken root around the edge of the water. Huey had been told that cattle scattered the seed in their droppings. Several J-Bar cows and calves loafed around the surface tank. They retreated 50 yards and turned to watch uneasily as the three men dismounted to let their horses drink.
This is a J-Bar windmill. Old Eli might get us thrown in the calaboose for trespassing.
It's a public road and the Lord furnished the water.
The Lord didn't put up the mill.
The site was devoid of firewood.
Walter, if you'll unpack the chuck, me and Fat'll gather some cow chips and get a little fire started.
Walter went about his task in silence. Fat was more vocal. Huey pulled several handfuls of old grass and stuffed them beneath a small stack of dried chips. He struck a match and set the grass to smoldering, blowing on the blaze to help it take hold. In a little while, the chips were glowing and throwing off heat enough to boil coffee and fry bacon. That and a couple of Soapy's cold biscuits made up what passed for a meal. Huey leaned back and savored a second cup of coffee.
This is the life we was born for. Breathing the clean outdoor air, eating from the fat of the land. We got good horses to ride and nobody around to boss us. Paradise couldn't be no better.
Sand blew into my plate. The bacon was burned and the water's got jip in it.
You'd complain if they hung you with a new rope.
Fat was born complaining.
That was as many words as he had spoken since they'd left Upton City. Huey began to hope his brother was finally coming around.
The way I figure it, the pace we're setting ought to have us in San Angelo the day after tomorrow. I don't reckon C.C. would begrudge us spending a night there and seeing the sights.
I hear San Angelo is a wide-open town.
C.C. wouldn't want us spending his money on such as that.
It wouldn't be his money. I brought some of my own.
I swear, Huey, when you die, you won't have enough money left to bury you. They'll just drag you off away from the house and throw a little brush on top of you.
And that's how I'd like to go. Spend my last dollar just before I take my last breath and die with a smile on my face. That way I won't have a bunch of kinfolks fighting over what I leave behind.
You don't have any kinfolks except me.
That's enough. As long as me and you stick together, ain't nothing can throw us.
A buggy approached, drawn by two horses. Another horse and rider trotted alongside.
Hey, somebody's traveling kind of late.
Oh, Lord, that's Eli Jessup coming yonder. Told you we might wind up in the calaboose.
Don't worry. If he says anything, I'll give him back his water.
Jessup drew on the reins and stared at the three cowboys. Huey recognized the rider as Jessup's foreman, Mitch.
Light and hitch, Mr. Jessup. Mitch, have some coffee.
Jessup climbed down, his legs stiff, his face weary. His heavy mustache seemed to droop.
Yeah, seems to me I know you boys. Work for C.C. Topley, don't you?
Yes, sir, that's a fact.
I guess you realize you're on my land.
Just this little bit of it. We couldn't hardly camp in the middle of a county road.
Jessup shrugged his broad shoulders.
Well, I don't reckon you're hurting anything if you don't stay long. What you doing here, anyway?
Well, we're going...
Huey poked him with his elbow and shut him up. C.C. had told Huey to lie if pressed.
We're on our way to San Angelo to see if it's all the town that we heard it is.
That was not a lie, just something less than the whole truth. Jessup seemed to find something mildly humorous. He winked at his foreman.
It's enough of a place to give you all the trouble you can handle if you don't keep one hand on your gun and the other on your purse. Ain't I right, Mitch?
The big cowboy smiled.
It's Snort Yarnell's favorite town. That tells you something.
Jessup looked toward the little campfire.
I believe you mentioned coffee.
We'll fix you a fresh pot. It'll just take a jiffy.
While the coffee boiled, Huey watched the sun sink below the western horizon behind a thin curtain of red and purple clouds.
Y'all are welcome to camp the night with us if you'd like to.
That's kind of you, seeing as it's my land. But me and Mitch have got to go back to headquarters. Got some cows coming in tomorrow from over on the Concho. I'd as soon C.C. didn't hear about it till we get settled.
Well, we won't be seeing C.C. for a while.
Good. You know, he used to be a reasonable fella before he got old and cranky. Bet you didn't know we was partners once.
Huey had not known that.
It came to a point that we was arguing all the time, so we decided to split everything before one of us got killed. Things rocked along all right until we got to one old roan horse we both wanted. He wasn't worth fighting over, but CC got so belligerent that I had to stand up for my rights. Mighty opinionated CC is. He'd fight a dog over a bone. It's hard to understand a man who'd let a friendship die over one old horse.
Huey nodded as if he agreed, though it seemed to him that there had been two mighty opinionated men in the dispute.
CC ain't spoke a civil word to me since, nor me to him. I've got no use for a man that damn contrary.
Whatever became of the horse?
Some horse thief run off with him. I morally hate a thief.
Jessup drank his coffee and motioned to Mitch.
Well, we better be moving on if we want to get home before the rooster wakes up.
Jessup climbed into the buggy.
Now you boys watch out for yourselves. They got shoppers in San Angelo that can steal your underwear without taking your pants off.
How can they do that?
As the buggy departed, Huey turned to Fat and Walter.
He ain't got horns and a tail after all. At least I didn't see him.
But if CC and him ever lock horns, we don't want to be standing in the way.
The route to San Angelo was marked by two small round mountains side by side on an undulating plain.
You know what those make me think of?
I can imagine. Don't you ever think about anything except women?
Women, whiskey, and good eats. What else is there?
You do all right with the whiskey and the eats, Fat, but you don't know how to treat a decent woman.
Huey felt encouraged. Walter was finally beginning to open up. Fat perked up as the town came into sight.
I vote that we spend a little of CC's money and get us a hotel room. He can afford it.
Huey and Walter never slept in a hotel room. Huey could only imagine how it would be to bask in such luxury.
Well, I'll bet even CC never stays in a hotel. Sleep in a wagon yard, maybe, but not a hotel. That's for rich businessmen and whiskey drummers.
Huey looked at Walter.
What do you think? Should we camp on the river and stake the horses out to grass, or put them in a livery barn and get them some oats?
Why ask for my opinion? You'll do what you want to anyway.
I always like to know what you're thinking, even when you're wrong.
CC would never pay us back for the stable bill. Whatever we spend, it'll be our own money.
Well, then we'll stake them out and spend our money for whiskey.
Huey had never been to San Angelo. He knew from conversation that it owed its birth to the confluence of the three Concho Rivers and to a frontier army post established some 20 years earlier to protect westbound freighters, immigrants, and a stagecoach line from Comanches and Kiowas. Now Indian troubles were over in this part of the country. Gossips were saying the army's days here were numbered. The military had the same outlook as C.C. Tarpley. Never spend a dollar until it's been squeezed like a lemon. Following the river, Huey saw a large tent.
Reckon there's a circus in town? I'd sure admire to see an elephant.
It appears to be a camp meeting. I believe I'll go tonight. I'd like to hear a little preaching from somebody besides you.
Wonder what kind of church it is. One that sprinkles you or one that tries to drown you?
I was baptized a long time ago. So were you, only you've probably forgotten about it.
Oh, I remember. Must have swallowed a gallon of muddy water. I've shied away from preachers ever since.
They found a place along the river where the grass had not been grazed off. Huey learned from a passing rider that the town claimed the land as part of the town site, so Huey reckoned it open to whoever came along. The three unsaddled and took the load from the pack horse. The rider, appearing to be in no hurry, watched them stake the animals on long ropes that allowed plenty of grazing room.
Where can we buy a decent supper?
The horseman pointed.
Cheapest the little hole in the wall over on Concho Avenue. Dutchman will sell you a big old bowl of chili for 10 cents. Well, then there's the Greek place a ways up the street. It'll cost you more, but it's easier on the stomach.
I reckon we'll take the Dutchman's chili.
Fat had grown fidgety, like a horse wanting to be on the go.
Now, y'all suit yourself. I've been told there's a fancy house here where all the women are good-looking and ready to play.
You better not forget where this camp is. We'll be traveling about daylight. If you're not here, we'll leave without you.
Fat hurried away at a pace Huey had seldom seen him achieve unless a cow was chasing him. The chili joint was easily found, but not before Huey located three saloons and mentally filed away their locations for future reference. By the time he and Walter finished the chili and two cups of coffee, they'd spent 15 cents apiece. To the southeast, across the river, Huey could see the stone buildings of the sprawling fort. A bugle's notes drifted softly on a light southern breeze as the flag was lowered for the day. Huey once thought about joining the army, but decided it imposed too many rules for a free spirit. He saw several soldiers and realized they were black. This was a Buffalo soldier post. A large man walked up beside Huey and pointed with a glowing cigar.
Look at them, trying to act like soldiers. Put a uniform on them and they think they're as good as us. It's high time the army pulled them out of here. We don't need them anymore.
Walter always sided with the underdog, for he had been one much of his life.
I'll bet when you did need them, you were glad they were here.
It was different then. Well, we ain't seen an Indian in years. We need them Buffalo soldiers to be gathered up and gone.
What would become of this town if the army was to close the post? Must put a pretty penny in people's pockets.
We hear the railroad is coming in. Give us the railroad and we won't need Grierson's brunettes.
Huey recalled hearing that Grierson was the post commandant's name. He shrugged. What happened to San Angelo or to the military was somebody else's worry. Huey was just passing through.
Walter, I'm ready for a drink. You coming?
I'm going to the meeting. I don't want to have whiskey on my breath.
Suit yourself. I guarantee I'll have more fun than you will.
Huey walked back down Chadbourne Street and stood on the corner at Concho Avenue, trying to decide which saloon to try. The first looked to be a little fancy for his taste, but he went in anyway. It offered a shiny mahogany bar and a large mirror with a hand-carved frame. On one end of the bar was a free lunch of bread, sausages, and boiled eggs.
Oh, I could eat in here and save 15 cents for better use.
He ordered a whiskey and stood at the bar alone. He counted a dozen customers, but none paid any attention to him. They looked like bankers and lawyers and drummers for the most part, not the kind of people eager to strike up a conversation with a dusty cowpuncher just in from the trail. Not even the bartender spoke to him beyond asking his pleasure and telling him the price. The whiskey was first rate, but the company was cold. As darkness came and the stars began to show, he walked outside to hunt for a friendlier place. He found it farther down on Concho. It was a plain-looking joint with a simple bar of pine lumber. Instead of a mirror, it featured a painting of a woman lounging on a bed with nothing to hide her several charms except for strategically placed wisps of cloth. It was the kind of art he could appreciate. He gave it a careful scrutiny while he sipped at his drink, thinking that Fat would probably appreciate it too if he were not entangled with the real thing. The whiskey was not as good as at the other place, but he liked the atmosphere. Two black soldiers came in and stood a little way down the bar. The bartender poured drinks.
Payday at the fort, ain't it?
Sure is. Our pockets are jingling.
I have to be a busy night then.
A customer sitting alone at a table glowered at the soldiers through a spiral of cigar smoke. Huey realized this was the man who had spoken to him at the river. The soldiers caught the hostile look and did not linger long. Uncomfortable, they left without ordering another drink.
Arlo, payday don't come but once a month. Wish you wouldn't spoil it for me by chasing off my customers.
Time was when their kind wasn't allowed where white men were drinking.
Well, you've got to understand that I'm in business. I need every dollar I can put together.
I never could see a man selling out his principles for a handful of silver.
An old man at another table impatiently tapped his cane against the floor. I remember a time when the Comanches had me surrounded. I was mighty glad to see them black boys come riding over the hill. I'd be pleased to stand and drink with them any time, and I'd pay for the whiskey.
Ah, you old fart. Any time he was home in bed.
The surly customer went back to his drink. Another black man walked in. He was not wearing a uniform. The bartender looked him over, then nodded in recognition.
Well, look who's here. I don't hardly know you in them town clothes. What went with the soldier outfit?
I finished my enlistment. I ain't leaving nothing here but my tracks. First, though, I have some of the best whiskey you got.
Best? You sure?
I can afford it. I got my mustering out money.
The barman reached down and fetched a bottle with a label brighter than the one from which Huey's drink had come. Huey felt the change in his pocket.
I believe I'll have a little of the same.
Bartender poured it. Huey raised it in salute.
Here's to the United States Army.
Arlo pushed up from the table, face reddening.
What kind of white man are you drinking with the likes of him?
Huey's face warmed.
I'm a free-born citizen of the sovereign state of Texas, and I'll drink with whoever I want to.
Maybe you got a little tar in your blood, too.
Arlo turned, jabbing his cigar in the soldier's direction.
You've had your drink. Now get your butt out of here.
The soldier straightened as if standing at attention on the parade ground.
I was born in bondage. But now I'm as free as any man. I'll leave when it suits me.
Arlo grabbed the cane from the old man's hand and struck the soldier across the side of the head.
Don't you get uppity with me! I won't take no sass!
The move took Huey by surprise. He saw the soldier bring his fist up like a hammer. Arlo's head jerked under the blow. He grabbed at the bar but landed heavily on his shoulder. He came to his feet and drew a pistol from his boot. As he charged past, Huey stuck out his foot. Arlo tripped and fell forward, striking his head against the brass rail at the foot of the bar. He lay too stunned to move. Blood trickled from a gash on his forehead. The soldier held his hand against the place where the cane had struck him. His ear was bleeding.
There's hell to pay now. You better get before Arlo gets up. He's got a streak of mean in him a yard wide. He's apt to kill you.
He hit me first.
But he's white and you ain't.
I said I'd leave when I'm ready. Well, I reckon I'm ready.
He nodded a silent thank you to Huey and disappeared out the door. The old man picked up his cane. It had a little blood on it. He wiped it off on Arlo's trouser leg. Then he swung it and gave Arlo a smart lick across the rump. He picked up the big man's fallen pistol and dropped it into a tobacco-stained spittoon. Old fart, am I? The bartender turned a baleful gaze in Huey's direction.
You tripped Arlo, didn't you?
He just ran into my foot is all. Some big men are clumsy.
He ain't much on forgiveness. You should make yourself scarce, too. I'd get plumb out of town.
Huey saw that Arlo was beginning to stir.
Yeah, sometimes you gotta choose between being brave and being smart.
He took a lingering look at the painting and walked out into the street. He tried to look nonchalant, but he stole a glance backward toward the saloon, checking for any sign of pursuit. He considered going to one of the other whiskey joints, but decided that Arlo might come looking for him. He thought of the camp meeting. Arlo would not expect to find him there. For that matter, Huey surprised himself a little. He wondered how the camp meeting idea came to him. The tent was lit by lanterns. Its sides were rolled up to let fresh air circulate. Huey walked slowly around it until he saw his brother sitting on a bench, sharing a hymn book with an elderly woman. At least, Huey thought, he doesn't have his mind on romance. He edged into the tent and made his way to Walter's side. Walter's eyes widened as if he'd seen the dead come to life.
How come you suddenly got religion?
Huey wondered if Walter could smell his breath.
Don't you think it's about time?
It's considerable overdue.
The woman looked over her glasses at them and frowned her disapproval of their talking during the service. Huey could not see the hymn book from where he stood, but he figured it was just as well. His voice might break up the proceedings. Men came down the aisle with a collection plate.
Oh, I would get here just in time for that.
Huey dug 2 bits from his pocket, changed his mind, and increased his contribution to 4 bits. He would have spent that on drink anyway had it not been for Arlo. Walter smiled at Huey's show of generosity.
Well, it's worth it if he finally gets over being mad at me.
As the preacher wound down a strong sermon against sin and extolled the virtues of tithing, movement outside the tent caught Huey's eye. Arlo and 2 friends were studying the crowd. Huey turned his head away, hoping Arlo wouldn't see him.
Sing in praise of his name.
Huey motioned to Walter to leave the exit on the opposite side of the tent from where Arlo had been. But Arlo had moved. He accosted Huey in the edge of the lantern light, tapped him with his forefinger. His head was bandaged.
Ain't you the pumpkin roller that tripped me in the saloon?
Huey put on his most innocent face.
A saloon? I'm a church-going man.
Huey feared his breath would betray him, but Arlo's was so strong that he couldn't have smelled anyone else's. Arlo shoved his face close to Huey's.
I'd swear you're the same bird. Maybe if the light was better.
He seemed inclined after a moment to give Huey the benefit of the doubt.
We're looking for an ex-Buffalo soldier that attacked me. I don't reckon you've seen him.
How would I know him? seeing as I was here at the meeting.
Huey had noticed a number of black people standing just outside the tent, listening to the service, but remaining apart from the whites. He doubted the one Arlo sought was among them. For his own safety, the soldier had probably put some distance behind him by now.
If we find him, me and my friends are gonna skin him out and hang his hide on the saloon door. And if I find the son of a bitch that tripped me, I'll cut off a strip of his hide and make me a quirt.
He gave Huey another suspicious looking over before he and his friends melted away into the darkness. Walter faced Huey with his mouth hanging open.
What kind of trouble have you got yourself into now?
He must have mistaken me for some other handsome fella.
If you wasn't in trouble, you wouldn't have joined back up with me so soon. I wouldn't have seen you till you came dragging in about daylight.
As they walked toward camp, Huey decided to tell Walter what had led to Arlo's fall.
It was my fault he didn't see my foot. You ought not to drink so much.
I'll never have thought you'd get yourself in Dutch over a darkie.
Well, it wasn't all that much. You'd have done the same if you'd been there.
I guess you did, right? But we might be smart to break camp early in case he comes hunting for you in the morning.
Yeah, he's cost San Angelo our business.
Huey and Walter broke camp at the first good light. As they had anticipated, Fat had not shown up. With a mutual to hell with him, they set off on the San Antonio Road. The military road from Fort Concho to Fort McCavitt led southeastward through rolling grassland and broad flats dotted with dense motts and scattered big live oak trees whose heavy branches reached out far enough to shade a goodly number of cattle. Huey judged it to be good cow country, for those he saw looked fleshier than those out on the Pecos. They'd traveled about 2 miles when he heard a horse loping up behind them. His first thought was of Arlo. He turned in the saddle to look back. He was unsure whether to feel relieved or not.
I hoped Fat would stay in San Angelo.
Fat Gervin's face was flushed. He was almost out of breath as he reined up beside the brothers.
How come y'all didn't wait on me? I ain't even had any breakfast.
Ain't that a shame? You're liable to waste away.
We told you this trip is strictly business. Where were you all night? No, don't tell me. I don't think I want to hear about it.
Fat broke in with a broad grin.
There was this girl, red hair and the bluest eyes you ever seen. It's all I could do to get up this morning and leave her.
Have you got any money left?
Yeah, just a little. But I'm telling you, boy, she was worth it.
What would Cece's daughter think?
You ain't gonna say nothing about it, are you?
Not if you hold up your end on the rest of this trip.
They passed a band of sheep scattered over an open prairie. A Mexican herder watched them, but showed no reaction until Huey waved. The herder made a small and tentative gesture in response. Huey supposed that Mexicans hereabouts, badly outnumbered, adhered to a cautious policy of speaking only if spoken to when dealing with Anglos. The Alamo was not yet forgotten.
Oh, sheep. Ain't nothing stinks worse.
They ain't that bad. A bunch of cows don't smell like flowers either. Especially if they've been on green feed and their bowels are loose. Folks say sheep are good money makers. When I get a place of my own someday, I'll have me a little flock.
How do you think you'll ever get a place of your own at 6 bits a day?
By saving 6 bits a day. It'll add up after a while.
You can have my share of sheep and the land, too. Every time I take a notion to get up and go, I don't want nothing holding me back.
What'll you do when you get old?
I don't expect I'll live that long.
Huey caught a glimpse of someone partially hidden in the dark protection of a mott. He thought again of Arlo, but it seemed unreasonable that the man carried a heavy enough grudge to set up an ambush miles from town. As the horseman neared the mott, the man warily stepped out into the open.
A darkie? They're probably going to try to bum some money off us.
Huey recognized the retired soldier, whose retort to Arlo had set off a brief tempest in the saloon.
That's the fella Arlo was looking for. If he ain't got a horse, he must have walked all night.
Black man approached with his hat in his hand.
I don't reckon you gentlemen would have some water I could borrow.
Huey lifted a canteen from the horn of his saddle. The soldier clutched it eagerly and took several long swallows without pausing for breath.
I'm much obliged. There's a good spring further on ways, but I ain't sure I could have made it there.
He looked closer at Huey.
You're the gentleman that helped me last night.
Huey was unaccustomed to being called a gentleman.
That wasn't much. I just stuck my foot out, and be danged if that clumsy Arlo didn't fall over it.
Well, thank you kindly. He was cocked and primed to shoot me.
The soldier looked back apprehensively.
You don't reckon he might be trailing me?
I wouldn't think so. Most likely he's got his head under his wing this morning. Probably can't even remember what you look like. Where are you headed afoot?
Someplace where there ain't no trouble. You reckon there's such a place?
I never found one.
The soldier handed the canteen back to Huey.
You all mind if I travel along with you a ways? I know this trail. I've been up and down it a good many times.
Think you can keep up walking?
Yeah, I was infantry.
Well, sure. Come along.
Huey neglected to ask Walter, and he looked to him now for belated approval. Fat's opinion didn't matter.
Why not? He knows the trail. Me and you might come to a fork and not know which way to go.
There's a stagecoach stand up ahead. The fella calls it Toenail Station. Says he ain't got nothing but toenail hold.
That's all me and Walter have had most of our lives. By the way, what do we call you?
Old mama named me Gabriel. She said when I was born, I squalled louder than old Gabriel's horn. Friends just call me Gabe. That don't sound so highfalutin, and it's easier to write.
You can read and write?
It was Huey's impression that most black folks couldn't.
Army chaplain taught me. Said just because I chanced to be born a slave wasn't no reason for me to stay ignorant.
I'm Huey, and this is my brother Walter. That there's Fat Gervin.
The name is Frank.
Mr. Huey, Mr. Walter, Mr. Fat.
Walter shook his head.
Mister is what they used to call our daddy, but he was old. You don't have to use it for us.
Huey suspected he would anyway. The racial divide was still formidable. Blacks and Mexicans were expected to feign deference, whether they felt it or not. Gabe fetched a blanket roll he had dropped at the edge of the mott. It was tied with a rope and had a loop so he could hang it over his shoulder.
You travel light.
A foot soldier can't afford to own more than he can tote. And every mile you walk, it gets heavier. How far y'all's going?
San Antonio, then south a ways.
We've been marched all the way down to San Antonio and back several times. They got a big army post there named for Mr. Sam Houston. He must have been a mighty man to get his name put on so much stuff. I don't reckon there'll ever be anything marked with my name on it unless it's a tombstone.
Fat edged his horse up close to Huey.
I don't see why we're letting him come along. Ain't nothing good'll come of it traveling with the likes of him. Like as not, he'll steal what he can get his hands on and slip away when we're not watching.
Then maybe you'd better keep an eye on him for us.
Yeah, I'll do that. I'll damn sure do that.
They might have reached Fort McCavitt in a day if they had pushed, but Huey saw no reason to do so. Tarpley had given them no specific date by which they must be back at the ranch. There were the horses to consider, and Gabe. Huey was a little surprised that the soldier kept up as well as he did. A couple of miles would have finished Huey, for it was the cowboy way to ride horseback if the distance was as much as 100 yards. Used to walking, Gabe often moved out in front of the horses. They didn't find a convenient spring or creek late in the afternoon, so they made a dry camp. They had water enough in canteens for making coffee, and the horses had drunk their fill a little earlier as they came upon a small natural basin holding water from a recent rain. Supper was 3 squirrels Gabe shot with Huey's pistol. Huey tried, but managed only to splinter bark from the trees and send the squirrels scurrying for cover. He considered giving the weapon to Gabe, but decided he might need it in a pinch someday. It could serve as collateral for a small loan if his pockets were empty.
Where'd you come from, Gabe?
I was born Mississippi. My mother served as a house slave. After emancipation, she working in the same house but drew a small wage. It gave her a little sense of independence. She couldn't read the scriptures, but she would walk 10 miles to hear a preacher talk about them. She named all us children after them old fellas in the Bible. She wouldn't name none of us Judas, though. That's where she draws the line.
Give a dog a bad name and you hang him.
Never was keen on working in the cotton fields. There wasn't much else I knowed how to do. As soon as I got my growth, I lit out. Went down to New Orleans, because folks said you could pick up money right off the street. Now, I found out folks lied. Wasn't no easy money anyplace.
A man is supposed to sweat for what he gets. Otherwise, he can't take pride in it.
Pride is for them that can't afford it. One day a man come along talking about the army and how we could make $12 a month and never set foot in a cotton patch. All we had to do was march a little and shoot a gun.
Gabe frowned, remembering.
Oh, how that man lied. He'll get a scorching when Gabriel blows that horn.
Huey did a quick mental calculation. What Tarpley paid him wasn't much, but it beat army wages. Seemed like the meaner the job, the less it paid.
If all the walking I'd done in the army had been in a straight line, I'd have fell right off the edge of the earth. At least we ate regular most of the time.
Having enough to eat and a place to sleep is worth more than money. Ain't that so, Walter?
If you have money, them things just naturally come to you. I don't aim to be poor all my life.
Man ain't poor for not having money. He's poor from wanting too much.
They washed their faces and watered their horses in the San Saba River before riding into Fort McCabot. It would be a while to the next water. Fort McCabot was a ragtag town smaller than San Angelo. Citizens had taken advantage of the abandoned fort, using some of the rock buildings for dwellings, barns, and storage, dismantling others for the roofing lumber, window and door frames. Though limited in size, the place did not lack for enterprises catering to the drinking man.
Ain't much to it, but I guess it's big enough for somebody to get in trouble if he really tried.
Gabe showed a dislike for the place.
If it's all the same, I'd like to stick close by you all. They got a reputation here for sicking the dogs on black folks. The only time us soldiers felt safe was when we stayed in bunches.
I don't see that we need to stop. We've got all the supplies we need.
We left San Angelo quicker than we figured on. Wouldn't hurt to clear the dust out of our throats. There's still a plenty of miles ahead of us.
Thirsty miles.
Huey picked a small frame structure that might have been thrown together by a drunken carpenter. Some of the nails were bent over, and dents in the wood indicated many false hammer strikes. Uneven red letters painted on a board declared that it served the finest liquors south of St. Louis.
That takes in a lot of territory. Sounds like my kind of place.
Walter looked dubious, but he tied his horse alongside Huey's. Only a handful of people were on the streets. They seemed to be staring at the newcomers, or perhaps only at Gabe.
I ain't staying out here by myself. I'm coming in with you.
Huey's eyes were slow in adjusting to the poor light. There were no customers. He saw a huge man get up from a table and move ponderously behind the crude plank bar.
What'll it be, gents?
Huey laid a few coins on the bar, and the barman picked them up with a hand that was as big as a satchel. He seemed to notice Gabe for the first time.
Did that boy come in here with y'all?
He did. We're all in need of a drink.
The barman frowned.
He'll have to get his from the cistern. And he'd better have his own cup, because he ain't drinking from the one out there.
We don't none of us really need a drink, Huey. Let's get out of here.
Walter took a couple of steps. Gabe was two paces ahead of him. Huey wanted to make for the door, but he was too provoked to move. He could hardly believe he heard himself.
He already took our money. We got drinks coming. Four of them.
I ain't much giving a drink. A sip of water from the cistern suit me just fine.
The proprietor slid several coins across the bar.
Here's your money back. I could whip you in a minute, cowboy. But if we was to fight, we'd bust up this place. And I'd as soon not have to do the fixing afterwards.
Huey saw that the man was giving him a chance to back away with minimum compromise to dignity. As a boy, Huey avoided schoolyard fights when he could. Even on the few occasions when he had won, he still hurt. Boyhood bruises and bumps convinced him it was better to be embarrassed for retreating in haste than to be embarrassed for getting the way knocked out of him.
I'd hate to see this joint wrecked any worse than it already is.
The saloon looked as if someone had turned a bull loose inside. It would not require much violence to bring the flimsy walls crashing down. The barman looked relieved that a fight had been avoided. He eyed the black man.
You three are welcome, but next time, leave him outside.
Huey counted the money to be sure the bartender was not cheating him.
There ain't gonna be a next time.
Fort McCabot would have to get along without their financial support.